Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up, Teron.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
That's right. You are now talking with TD. Boy, those lungs are doing the thing, ain't they, Elijah?
That's a record right there.
Yes, sir. Figure we got to go extra long since we are making our return. And it's also after a very impressive Titans win over the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Tennessee Titans, 9-4, the number four seed in the AFC Conference. Playoff race, the number one team in the AFC South. How about it? Let's get right into this Jaguars win. And I think really the main thing that you have to pull away from this win is that defense. And yeah, I know. Jaguars are 1-11. Okay, yeah. I mean, that team's not good.
Are they pros?
They are pros. They get paid to play. And you could only knock down what is put in front of you. And that's what they did. And I think this was a good example of this Titans team doing what they are supposed to do. Mm-hmm. They are supposed to win a lopsided game over the Jaguars. And that's what I did. Well, excuse me. That's what they did. that's what I wrote about.
They did. You reported on
and
wrote about.
That's a funny little blooper there, but hey, it's all good. I think really, you know, when you look at this defense, they gave up 10 points, and it was really important to, you know, have this type of outing. They were solid on the third down side of things. They were solid in the red zone. There was one out of four red zone trips the Jaguars were able to score a touchdown. The third down percentage was around like 35%, which is, hey, that's a lot better than that 53% that they're at for the year, which, by the way, is one of the worst in NFL history. I mean, it's bad. But if they can continue to get this type of play that they got, especially out of the secondary, they have a hope. They have a chance. And Ty Smith, I want to shout him out first. You know, he was very aggressive against the run. His coverage was solid. He had a couple pass breakups on third down. He had one in the red zone. He definitely held his own, and he wasn't able to just sit there and line up at left corner all the time. He had to kind of move back and forth because why? Malcolm Butler got another assignment to travel with the opposing team's top receiver. Shut him down. Shut him down. That's what he did, and he was targeted. Overall, DJ Chark had 9 targets. He had 2 catches for 16 yards. Not all of those 9 times. 7 of those targets came to Chark with Butler in coverage. But Butler did an outstanding job, man. Mm-hmm. And then that interception, climbing that ladder and going up and getting it. And, he did a really good job. He was slightly beaten on the play, but he did a good job of using closing speed and timing that jump and going up and getting it. Malcolm Butler is playing really good football. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're on Twitter, hit that retweet button for him to go to the Pro Bowl because – he's playing at that level, right? Mm-hmm. The secondary, and don't get clouded by what you're looking at overall from the secondary. Yes, as a unit, the secondary is playing bad, but Malcolm Butler, he's shutting people down. You know, and you're not seeing him get beat as much as you did before. You see him playing very aggressively. I mean, you look at that game, he was impressed a good amount of times. And one of the things I love about Butler the most, and I think of the Ravens game when they had him playing off. And, you know, Lamar just said, I'm just going to throw the ball to Dez Bryant. And he was throwing short passes. Butler was coming up there and ragdolling him to the ground. I love the aggressiveness that Malcolm Butler plays with. And that's really important. If you're going to play off coverage, if you're going to play it, I suggest not doing it. But if you're going to play it, daggum it, you got to tackle them in front of the sticks, and that's what he does really well. So you got to give a shout-out to Malcolm Butler, but there could be some reinforcements on the way. Adoree Jackson, he has been limited in practice, but I think it's a matter of time before he comes back. Christian Fulton was activated from IR. Like, finally, he was designated for return. Then he was finally activated on Wednesday, Tuesday. So that's a plus for that secondary. But as Mike Vrabel said, he has to get more practice, you know, and that's something that, you practice the way you play and you develop those habits that transfer to games in practice. That's something, if you watch the Titans during individual period, you see them work on so many different skills and techniques and even situations that you're going to face in the game. So it is important for the guys to be out there practicing, especially a younger guy like Fulton. That communication is major. That's something that all three levels of the defense has spoken about. So they got to get that together. And I think if you could get those coverage guys out there, right, and solidify that left corner spot with Adoree Jackson coming out and get him a couple games under his belt for the playoffs, that will really help when you're going against a team like the Chiefs. I mean, if you look at it right now, the Chiefs and Bills, those are the two teams that you got to put the Colts in there too. I'm sorry. You got to put the Colts in there. Those three teams, those are the ones where you got to be like, okay, look, it's going to be interesting. But obviously you have the Browns there. You have the Ravens there too. So however way you split it, you're going to need as much help in that secondary as possible. I don't see anything getting better up front. Like, they're not going to just all of a sudden wake up and figure out how to finish the job. Mm-hmm. But if that coverage could get better with the return of Fulton and with Adoree Jackson making his debut and getting worked into things, that will help the guys up front. So I think that's where your hope has to be in that secondary. And Kevin Byard and Kenny Vaccaro and Amani Hooker, who's playing outstanding football. Amani Hooker is doing his thing. And, you know, Elijah, we had him on this show. We had him. I remember he first got drafted and we had him on. And we talked about how he reminded me of Malcolm Butler. Interesting thing, because when I asked him what guy in the league, you know, has similarities, you know what he said? Desmond King.
Ironic.
Yeah. Now here they are, teammates. Ironic. Once again, teammates at Iowa, teammates here. And Desmond King is another factor. So this secondary, you have names there, but you have players that, you know, play well behind that name. So I think really – the key is that secondary, being able to come in there and help out the back end, helping the front end, and getting some of those cover sacks. I can recall only seeing one this year, and that was when Jeffrey Simmons had one 3 weeks ago. So I want to say it was against the Colts. It was. So 2 weeks ago. It might have been. Yeah, that's 3 weeks ago because you got Jaguars, Browns, and then Colts. Stuff starts to run together. You know what I mean?
It's been that kind of year.
Yeah, it's been that. 2020, here it is. So I wanted to open up about the defense and just get into them a little bit. Ladies and gentlemen, your hope is in the secondary, and there are some reinforcements on the way. So take solace in that. Another thing that I want to point your attention to is subscribing to our podcast, Talking with TD. If you're not subscribing and, you know, you want to know where to find it, just search it on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes. If you are subscribing, let's go ahead and get that review and rating. We appreciate you. We're going to go to a break. Come back with our first guest.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. We're going to keep the theme of the music going for the city that we're bringing in. And you know what we do each week? I get in that black book, that ESPN NFL Nation black book, phone a friend, bringing in my guy, Michael Rosny. Michael, what's going on?
Not too much. Is it really a black book? I would have thought with, you know, the colors of our company, it was probably more red.
Yeah, you know what? I just used the figure of the speech because it's actually not even a book. It's just a
– I know.
A matter of scrolling through the phones.
So when we – started NFL Nation here, there was actually a document with all of those phone numbers. So it was a Word doc that you would scroll through. I actually had to find someone's number recently, and, you know, it's amazing, you know, it's just amazing how much of a resource that is.
Yeah, you know, one thing I learned is to shoot the email, because what happened to me a few times is – it was an 860 number, which obviously, you know, that's our work numbers. and I would text someone and never get a reply. And I'm like, wow, he must not like me. And then when I saw him at the game, I was like, hey, man, you know, I sent you a text. Oh, that's not my number. Use this number, blah, blah, blah. And then after that, I said, you know what? I'm just emailing because I know I got the right one with that.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's what I do, too, for the podcast that I have. And that's, yeah, email is your friend.
No doubt about it. So let's get into it because, you look at this Lions team. You talk about banged up. I mean, Frank Ragnow, let's start with him. A fractured throat? I mean, is that even an actual inch? Like, how do you do that?
Man, I do not know the answer to that question. So I went back and watched every snap from the first two series when it supposedly happened. And I couldn't find anything that was obvious. There wasn't him grabbing the throat. There wasn't him in doubled over in pain. Like, nothing really stood out. There were a couple plays toward the goal line on the first drive where maybe something happened because it was more of a pile. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it was just something that, I mean, it's probably a freak type of thing. I mean, it's a very rare injury. If you go on the National Institutes of Health website, they say it's a rare injury. It's caused a lot of times by car accidents and by sports. And apparently occasionally a strangulation and once the gunshot. But it's something that you don't really hear about. Henry Anderson suffered apparently at least a similar type of injury, I guess, in 2017. But it's no joke. Now, some Lions players were joking about it like while the game was going on because no one knew how serious it was. Dude was going to Matthew Stafford and Chase Daniel and say, I can't speak. I can't, you know, you have to handle the calls. And they did, and they didn't know what happened. Maybe he lost his voice, maybe get punched in the gut, whatever it is, right? But then the next day they found out how serious it was. So clearly not a laughing matter now, but that's just where they were and what was going on with it. But he played every snap. He didn't allow a pressure. He didn't allow a sack. He just played. And didn't complain about it either. Mm. Like, I don't know, if I had a fractured throat, I mean, I would imagine I would be crying. But beyond that, like, I certainly wouldn't be playing football. I would be like, get me to the hospital.
Right, exactly. Mm. And that's the thing that's so crazy about it. But that's not even the only injury, right? You have Kenny Galladay, Terrell Crosby, Matt Stafford. What's going on with these guys?
So Kenny Galladay's had a hip injury for 2 months now going on. Every time it looks like he's trying to come back and might come back, just doesn't get back. He'll practice for a day, and then that's it. The last couple of weeks, he hasn't even done that. So no one's really sure. He hasn't been placed on injured reserve. We've requested to talk with him every week. He has not been made available. So it's unclear. Now, he is a free agent after the season. There have been contract discussions, or were before they fired their general manager, and it's not clear how well those were going. Now, I don't think that that's necessarily playing into this, but that's kind of where you are with Kenny Galladay. Matthew Stafford has cartilage injury in his ribs. He talked today, actually one of his best Zoom calls of the year and of recent memory for him. He was very open kind of what's going on. He basically said, listen, I need to be able to throw in order to play. I need to be able to have good movement in order to play. And moreover than that, he's like, I don't want to play if I don't think I'm going to be able to finish the game. He doesn't want to play and just kind of give it a shot if it's, you know, not going well from the first series, because he doesn't think that that's fair to his team. He said he will play if he feels like he can, you know, actually throw and actually play well and at a high level and finish. Or, you know, you never really know what happens, as he said, if you take a big hit. But he wants to at least go in with the thought process of doing that. And to me, it sounded like if he doesn't think he can do that, then he's not going to give it a go, because he doesn't want to, A, injure himself further, or B, put his team in that position, especially obviously as banged up as they are at the moment. And the last thing with Stafford, very simply, is, you know, he said, listen, I'm going to try and throw by the end of the week. All I can really do now is rest and, you know, ice and heat and some movement, and you kind of go from there and see what happens. Daryl Bevel said he has no problem with Matthew Stafford not practicing at all this week and then going out there and playing. Mm-hmm. But I would imagine that Matthew Stafford probably needs to at least do something for his own peace of mind,
right,
to know whether he can get through a game in order to play. To me, Friday is going to be the day. That's the day you're really looking at to say, well, if he does stuff on Friday, maybe he's got a shot. If he doesn't or does very little, I have a tough time seeing it happening, because this isn't like when he was on the COVID list and, you know, was healthy. This is not that. Like, he is clearly hurt. You can tell it when you're watching that Zoom call, that he's definitely in pain.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine it's a rib injury, you know, that's not, you know, like a fractured pinky or something. So it's definitely something to obviously be concerned about. But some of the guys that are healthy, I want to look at a couple of the younger guys, right? Because these were guys that when they were coming out were connected to the Titans, TJ Hockenson and DeAndre Swift. How have these young guys come in and just become a critical part of the offense?
Well, let's start with Swift, because he actually talked on Wednesday and, like everyone else we've talked about, has been dealing with an injury. Now, his injury was a brain injury, then turned into an illness. He said he actually wasn't even sure if he had a concussion or not. Mm. He just had headaches for a couple of weeks and kept him out of games. He says he's okay now. When he's been playing, he's been their best back. He's giving them a combination of a strong runner between the tackles, a guy who has some speed and elusiveness, and is a fantastic plus-level route runner as a running back. And he's been very key for anything the Lions have done successfully on offense. He is a big part of that. He is by far their lead back at this point when he's healthy and plays. TJ Hockenson had a kind of a rough first year, mostly marred by injuries. He hurt his ankle really, really badly. Probably took till maybe even a couple weeks into this season for him to be truly back. Before that, he had a head injury as well. And like, so he dealt with some stuff as a rookie too. This year, he's been quite good. He's, I think, been one of the better tight ends in the NFL. He's definitely been one of the better tight ends in the NFC. Now that George Kittle has largely been hurt most of the year, he could end up being a Pro Bowler this year, somewhat by default in the NFC, because Zach Ertz hasn't really played much. George Kittle hasn't really played much. You look around the rest of the NFC, and it's not exactly the treasure trove of tight ends like the AFC is with some of the guys that are around there. Mm-hmm. So we'll see there, but he's had a good season. He's been reliable. He's been a guy that they can use on intermediate routes, on short routes. They really like him in the red zone. They've been able to be creative with him. His blocking is getting better, and he's a guy that I really think – I get the sense he'll make the Pro Bowl this year, like I said, somewhat because of default, but I feel like next year is a year where you could really see him break out and maybe be one of the top five tight ends in the NFL. He's definitely trending in that direction.
Yeah. But what about how this team has been since Daryl Bevel has taken over? I mean, usually a firing a head coach, like, that sends a shockwave through the organization. How have they responded to that?
Well, very well. Very, very, very well. In some ways, it feels like a weight was lifted off of everybody within the organization. Everybody seems looser. Everybody seems lighter. And I would even throw that to media, too. Like, you know, there's just more of an air of, like, okay, this is a game. Okay, like, let's not be super, super, super serious about this. Like, it's their jobs. Like, they're being serious about it. Like, make no mistake about that. But it's not like, oh, my God, don't ever say anything ever or anything like that. Like, it's not like that anymore. And it felt like that when Matt Patricia was around. Guys would be tight-lipped. Guys would be fearful of making mistakes in games, fearful of saying something in practice. Social media wasn't exactly encouraged. Like, Daryl Bevel is like, I'm going to be me, and you can sense it. Like, I use this example. Last week, the Packers were playing the Lions, and Daryl Bevel coached Brett Favre. He coached Aaron Rodgers. He's kind of a Colts hero. in Wisconsin because he led them to a Rose Bowl win as a quarterback. Mm. So he's kind of like this big deal guy in Wisconsin. So he's telling stories all week. He told one story about going cougar hunting with Brett Favre, which, I mean, it made the rounds, basically. Like, it became a Twitter joke, the whole nine, right? But in that answer, which was maybe 3 minutes of answer, I learned more about Daryl Bevel than I did in 2.5 years of Matt Patricia in press conference. Like, and it's like that almost every press conference where he is asked anything. I mean, his first press conference as a head coach, he dropped that both of the, like, two of the boyfriends of his daughters asked him that weekend if they could marry his daughters, and the proposal hadn't happened yet. So, like, it was like, well, wait, did you just blow the surprise? He insisted he did not later in the week. But, I mean, that's just where he is. He's just a loose, happy, kind of comfortable in his own self guy. And it's just like, I got a 5-game audition. Let's see what happens. And I mean, I think that's how he's treating it. And I've got the sense that every player is at least a little bit looser around him and around that. And that you can just sense it, that they really want to play for him and that they are playing hard and playing hard for him. I think you saw that in how they beat the Bears, and really you saw that in how they played against the Packers too, because they were incredibly undermanned defensively. Stafford obviously gets hurt. It's still a one possession game. That game had no business being a one possession game, like, based off of the talent level that was on the field. And they were 4 to 5 inches maybe of the ball being in bounds or Miles Kilbrew's foot of recovering an onside kick to maybe get the ball back to have a shot to go and get the game tying touchdown, like, with Chase Daniel at quarterback. So, I mean, they're playing for him, and that to me is something that is noticeable, and the energy is noticeable. Even though we're not in the locker room every day, obviously now, not really around practice all that much, you can just sense it, that people are more comfortable and people feel like they can be more themselves than they could under Matt Patricia.
And that's big time, because a player has to be comfortable to be able to excel. Do you think that Daryl Bevel has a legitimate shot at this job?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, you know, they're going to cast a wide net for candidates for general manager and for head coach. I think if he had won out, yeah, I think he would have had a shot. Especially because if he had won out, they would have been 9-7. That might have gotten them in the playoffs. You kind of take your chances at that point. You're probably going to New Orleans or going to Green Bay. Now, granted, you know, they got blown out in Green Bay earlier in the year, but they just played them really tough. They had a lead on New Orleans. Now, granted, that was a New Orleans minus Michael Thomas, but they had a lead on New Orleans in Week 4, so they could play them tough. Yeah, I mean, I think it would have been an interesting scenario. Now, could they get to the playoffs at 8-8? I think there's like a 2% chance that can happen. But again, Daryl Bevel, and this is, you know, where Daryl Bevel differs from Matt Patricia, right? Matt Patricia would have been like, oh, we're not thinking about that, one game at a time, you know, whatever. Daryl Bevel is like, so you're like, he basically, you know, he chewed up his a Dumb and Dumber lie, and there's a chance, like, and that's just kind of who he is, and the team has bought into that. So I think that the vibe he is setting is really a positive. Do I think that will get him the permanent job? No, I don't. If they go 4-1, I think he should at least get an interview, especially considering that probably means beating Tennessee. Well, that does mean beating Tennessee, Tampa Bay, and Minnesota to close out the year. Mm. If he goes 3-2, I think he should at least get an interview. But to me, what's happening right now is he is setting himself up to go be a coordinator somewhere next year and be really part of that cycle in 2021, yeah, or after the 2021 season. Maybe he gets some interviews depending how many jobs open after this season. I just don't know if that's in Detroit, depending on kind of how big of a rebuild or a reshuffling the owner and the team president and new special assistant to the owner and team president, Chris Spielman, and whoever they hire as general manager believes that it truly is.
Yeah, well, hey, man, my guy, Louis Riddick, is getting an interview there. That would be pretty interesting if he gets that job. I know the Texans are looking at giving him an interview as well. So that's a good thing. Before I get you out of here, on the defensive side of things, two coaches that I am really cool with, Corey Unlin and Ty McKenzie. These are both guys on the defensive side. Obviously, Unlin is the DC. What's up with the defense? I know with Matt Patricia being a defensive-minded coach, this was supposed to be the strong suit. What's going on defensively?
It is not the strong suit, Teron.
Yeah.
not even close to being the strong suit. They're not good. They're not a good defense. Now, granted, some of that has to do with injuries. Trey Flowers has been out for a while. Nick Williams and Dan Shelton's on injured reserve. Nick Williams has been kind of banged up, and he's, you know, that was the interior that they really built. At linebacker, they're just not talented enough, frankly. They're not. Like, they're missing explosive playmakers that Ty McKenzie's probably used to having in Tennessee.
Yeah.
They don't have them. You know, they have Jamie Collins, and that's about it. Like, Jelani Tavai could be a good player, but he's speed's an issue there. Jared Davis is kind of just what he is, and has never really panned out to be that high-level three-down backer. Reggie Ragland's played okay. Like, you're not getting a lot out of the linebacker group. And then the secondary, I mean, corner, Jeff Okuda's on injured reserve and done for the season. Desmond Trufant has injured his hamstring his other hamstring three times this year, so he hasn't been able to stay healthy. So Daryl Roberts, who has been starting for them at corner, is also hurt. So it's Amani Awarie and then kind of like merry-go corner, basically. Like, you sometimes have Justin Coleman out there, who's usually their slot. Sometimes you've got Mike Ford out there, and you know, Mike Ford's a really good special teams player, but he's like your fifth corner for a reason. Like, you don't really want him out there for a whole game. Safety is interesting because Daron Harmon's played really well. Tracy Walker's had a very inconsistent season, but some of that is due to how they used him at the beginning of the year. Like, Tracy Walker was arguably their best defensive player or second best defensive player entering this season. Like, you know, other than Trey Flowers. And they put him on the second team almost all of training camp, and no one could figure out why. And they I think it kind of messed with him a little bit. And, you know, he just hasn't had a good year. The one guy on their defense that's been really, really strong all season long is Romeo Okwara. He's going to be a free agent after the season. He is a pass rusher, an edge rusher, and he is making himself some money every week. He's looking more like he did in 2018 when he got 7.5 sacks. He's got 7 sacks with 3 games to go this year. And he's playing well. He's really good off the edge. He's very slippery. He's difficult for offensive linemen to handle one-on-one. And I think he would have already surpassed his career high if he had anyone helping on the other side with Trey Flowers or Everson Griffin. And Everson Griffin didn't play on Sunday because he's on the COVID reserve list, so we don't know where he's going to be there. So it's a mess, man. Like, that's the easiest way to describe their defense. It's just a mess. It's undermanned. And frankly, I mean, Derrick Henry could have all of the yards, like all of them. Like, every yard that you can think of, Derrick Henry could have it. If I were Mike Vrabel, I would probably try and run Derrick Henry every play. Like, well, I covered Michigan for a while, and I remember this was towards the end of the Rich Rodriguez era, and this is going off a little bit, but just to give you an idea of what I'm talking about, Wisconsin ran it in the second half against Michigan one game, like, every play but two. And they ran the same play. They basically ran halfback dive up the middle. I think it was, like, Melvin Gordon and James White, if I remember correctly. And they couldn't stop them. And I feel like that would be what would happen if the Titans decided to do that on Sunday. Like, they just wouldn't be able to really stop Derrick Henry on a consistent basis.
Hey, he's on the quest for 2,000 yards, so that would definitely help his quest, man. Mike, I appreciate you jumping on. Always good to talk a little shop. This COVID thing, man, won't see you this weekend, but, you know, we'll hopefully catch up at one of these summits if we're able to get that going. And, man, keep killing it.
Thanks, man. You too. Yeah, well, hopefully one of these days. I'm disappointed. This is one of the trips that I circled at the beginning of the year that I really want to go to.
Yeah. Everybody wants to come here to Nashville, man, and there's a good reason. I'll talk to you Sunday.
All right, absolutely. No.
All right.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
What are we?
They don't know about that, man.
Not at all. That's right. He got to play the guitar. Yes, yes, yes.
Yes,
it's
sir.
About that time. Run TMC. I know you got something. I know you went to the internet and looked up some lyrics. So,
oh man,
come
but
on,
you're over, man. You
come
over,
with
you
it.
Over. You are 0 for 3, man. Let's see if you have another swing and a miss. All right, here we go. It's not funny when we got on the wrong plane.
That's his tricky, right?
No, man. 0 for 4. Swing and a miss.
Swing and a miss. Struck
we
him out.
We wanted to go to L.A., but when we're headed for Spain, it's not funny. Oh,
man, you doubled me up. You got me on the same pitch.
Because you missed it again. So
you used,
swing and a miss.
You used that one before, man. We gotta,
exactly.
We gotta get
see,
a different
I see if
you
were paying attention.
Oh, I was paying attention. Just couldn't finish the line.
Swing and a miss.
Swing and a miss. That's it. Well, let's
that's
hit
good,
something
man.
Because Derrick Henry, that's what's man. Good, man. and he hit something for a good another 200-plus yard
man.
Rushing game. Only guy in NFL history has the most 200-yard
wow.
rushing games with two touchdowns in NFL history. He has four. He was in the company of Barry Sanders.
Wow.
LaDainian Tomlinson, and, man, this slips my mind, the fourth one, or the third one.
Was it Eric Dickerson?
No. Barry Sanders, LT, and I forget who the fourth one was. It's going, or the third one. It's going to pop
you
into
good,
my
you
mind.
Good.
Jim Brown, was it?
Jim Brown, I think
yeah.
it was.
Jim Brown.
Yeah.
Whoa, come on, big dog.
That's classic right there.
That's classy.
But he's on the quest for 2,000 yards. In his mind, he's on the quest for a championship because individual stats doesn't matter to – they don't matter to this team, but, man, when you see what he did,
man,
what can you say about it?
But you know what's cool, man, is he's still getting better. That's,
yeah.
that's the scary
yeah.
part about it. He is getting better and better. Look at his first year on how much he progressed. And just as a runner and just as a, you know, not running side to side and one cut and go. I mean, look at the touchdowns that he's making. He's not dancing. It's one cut and I'm running through your face. And, you know, that's what's scary about this whole situation is each year he's getting better. Each year he's better than his skill set and his craft. And, man, if he keeps this up, I think, in my opinion, he's going to go down as the best running back of all times.
Ooh, that's very –
Not the best of all times, one of the best.
Gotcha.
There's a difference.
Even still, that's very lofty comparisons. I tell you what's really interesting to me. Yesterday I got the chance to talk to Sean Alexander. And
mm-hmm.
Listen, I told him this. It, you know, I said I was always a 49ers fan. I'm not a fan of any team now, but
right.
I when I was watching football really, really heavy, he was a guy that I hated to love, but I loved his
yeah.
game. And
yeah.
in talking to him, just as far as how he started out as a backup, then worked his way into the starter,
wow.
and then had a bunch of carries at the prime of his career. We're talking about three consecutive seasons with at least 325 carries,
mm-hmm.
Their careers really resemble each other.
Yeah.
An awful lot. And just getting all these carries and then averaging a lot of yards per carry, because you look at that 05 season,
mm-hmm.
this rascal had 370 carries,
1,880
yards, 27, you hear Ooh. Me? 27 touchdowns.
27.
But on that 370, he averaged 5.1 per carry.
Oh, my God.
That sounds so much like Derrick Henry.
It does. And here's the crazy part about it is he's not taking any off seasons off. I mean,
no.
if you watch some of his videos, man, he's mastering everything that he's doing. I mean, I remember watching one of my favorite movies. It was Rocky II.
I thought you were going to say Karate Kid.
Nah, not Karate Kid. But his trainer said this. If you're going to beat Apollo Creed, you got to do something that you've never done before, or you got to work on something that you're not good at. And that was speed. And that's the same thing with Derrick Henry.
Mm-hmm.
Henry works on what he needs to work on the offseason. And that's why he's getting better. I mean, watching him run heels, watching him have ball security, watching him do foot drills. It just shows you that he's not satisfied with the year before. He wants to get better and better and better. And another thing that he's doing is even though he's getting hit at the line of scrimmage, he's standing in front of the chains. He's getting 3 and 4 yards to where it'd be 2nd and 7 as opposed to 2nd and 10, and that's what he's becoming a special back.
No doubt about it. And I think the other thing that you have to mention, and this is something that Sean Alexander pointed to also, is the amount of long carries he gets. And that's what really helps his average. This guy will have 7 carries for 20 yards and break off a 50-yarder, and next thing you know is 8 for 70, and an average is creeping towards 5 yards per carry. And I think that's one of the things that's so fun about watching him, the way he could just tilt the scales back into his favor as far as the numbers are concerned. You saw it against the Jaguars, man. You know, he had a number of nice, chunky runs, right? I mean, we're talking about 10 to 25-yard carries.
Yeah, but I think in the first quarter, he had like 45 yards.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and then right when he got, when they said the amount of yards he had, I'm like, this cat's about to have a humongous day. I mean, you could just feel it. The way he was running and, you know, the way his line was blocking and even the wide receivers were blocking, because they know that, man, if we get this big dog rolling, he's going to do something special. And, you know, just watching him run, if you look at year one and you look at now, he just has a different attitude. You remember that song by Patti LaBelle, I Got a New Attitude?
Yeah,
But he's just got an attitude of, I know you're trying to stop me. I know you got 27 people in the box, but that don't mean anything. And then you got to take your hat off to the offensive line with Saffold, Jones and Kelly, and those guys blocking for him.
Mm-hmm.
They have that same type of attitude. So when you have that offensive line that has an attitude, when you have those receivers that have an attitude, and you got 22 toting the rock with an attitude, it's the recipe for success. Because you remember when they played the Indianapolis Colts, they went a 3-by-1, 3 wide receivers to the right and 1 receiver to the left. Watch the blocking by the wide receivers. That just shows you that everybody is zoned in. It shows you that everybody is participating in what Derrick Henry's doing. Special, special guys.
Yeah, no doubt. And even, you know, little Cam Batson on that screenplay. And he's not the biggest guy, but he's out there and he's throwing his body around. It's that one-two, and that's a team mindset. And that's why every time you talk about what this rushing attack does, what Derrick Henry does, you notice it's all 11. That's what's being
all
mentioned.
11.
It's all 11. And Tannehill has a – I mean, there have been times where Tannehill – has you know, rolled out and blocked in front of him, or you have to look at what he does at the line of scrimmage, right? Checking out of a bad play and into a good one. That happens a series of times. So it really does take all 11. I'm glad you mentioned the receivers, though, because those guys, Corey Davis especially, they go down there and they dig out those DBs down the field, and that's a big-time part of why these 10 to 15-yard runs at times will be a 40 to 50-yard.
Yeah, and even, you know, when Tannehill sees something that the front is doing, he'll motion Davis in between the guard and the tackle, and all of a sudden you got big 8-4 hitting somebody in the mouth. I mean, when's the last time you've seen a receiver motion inside the guard and the tackle and take it on linebackers? I mean, what?
Yeah.
That just shows you that everybody's zoned in. Everybody is participating in something great. I mean, back in the day, you know, man, I'm not blocking anybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, not
my blocking
anybody.
Is running you off. Come on with me.
but these guys are looking to block. I mean, look at Brown, man. When Henry makes those long runs, Brown is running down the field right beside him. Like, hey, dog, let's go. It just shows you that everybody's involved, everybody cares, and everybody's zoned in. That's why the running game is so special.
Exactly. And just taking a quick look at some of Henry's carries, right? You'll see a 36-yarder, a 39-yarder, 45-yarder, 22-yarder, 29-yarder. I mean, that's why this guy gets 200 yards. You know what I mean? Because he's breaking off all of these runs. That stuff adds up, and it offsets that -2. So it's an excellent point there, and it's something that we really have to look at. I want to kind of flip it, though.
Sure.
Just real quick, just to get your opinion on Adrian Peterson. He's obviously not the feature guy, DeAndre Swift, a guy that the Titans showed interest pre-drafting, is definitely a really good dude. He tried to holler at my daughter at a track meet back in the day.
You lying.
Oh, I'm dead serious. I'm dead serious.
Man, do we need to go get him, man?
No. He got the eye from me. You know what I mean? I just told him, just make sure your pops don't put me in the headlock, man. His pops is decent. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, he's naturally gifted, you know what I mean? But Adrian Peterson, to see him do this over this period of time and still have the juice that he has, well, what are your thoughts on that?
man, just the passion. He just loves football and the passion to play. I mean, just watching him run, even though he's older and he's not having those big runs that he used to have, he's still running with some stank on it now. He's still running to run somebody over. And the Tennessee Titans have to really take this into account because they can't let, you know, Swift or Peterson get loose because they still can hurt you. I know Peterson is old, and I know he's got a little wear and tear on his body, but you give a little crease and he start hunting up Byard and those safeties, it could be a long day. So we can't take this team for granted. I understand that they're 5-8, and I understand the record's not good, but they still got some talent on the team. I don't know if Stafford is playing. I know Swift is playing. Peterson is playing. But, you know, they got some talent to do something with the Titans.
Yeah, no doubt. And Peterson back in 2018 when he was with the Redskins, you know,
I remember.
He listened.
Yeah.
He gave him some work. Or 2019 that was.
You don't think he remembers that?
For sure. For sure. They better. Or it was 18. He had 26 carries for $119. Something that's really interesting to me. Did you see one of their DBs? One of their DBs, or not their DBs, one of their offensive linemen had a daggone fractured throat.
How do you get a fractured throat? Like,
that's what I'm saying. I don't know how you get that, but
he must have ate a, I mean, I'm not being funny, you know, but how do you get it?
Yeah, and the thing that was crazy in the sentence, I think it was Ian Rappaport that announced it. And in this sentence, he also said that there's a chance he may play. What?
No, man.
Fractured throat.
You can't call no plays. I mean, you can't.
Right. Exactly.
What you gonna do? You can't call the
protection. What you're seeing up front. Like that's. I don't know. They'll figure that out. But I wanted to kind of throw that in the conversation. I figured you'd find that interesting. But before we get out of here, I want to get your perspective on Kevin Byard. You heard me on the air on Tuesday, kind of talking about some of the things that I feel are different for him. You know, I think he's more comfortable playing center field. He's playing down in the box some more. It's kind of a mystery. So I'm always interested in getting other perspective. For you, you know, when you see Byard, and this is a guy that I've been on tape, and I pounded through the table. Talking about him being the best safety in the league. I'm not going to say that right now, but what are you seeing with Byard? What's going on?
I think a lot of quarterbacks are figuring him out. And when I say figuring him out, I think they're using their eyes to get him away from his spot. And I'm going to give you a perfect example. That touchdown that Landry caught on Butler.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch the eyes of Baker, he looks to the right. And if you watch Byard, he kind of shifts over a little bit. And all of a sudden the window opens and he throws it right in there to Landry. I mean, it's just eyes, because that's what quarterbacks do to get the safety off their spot. And he's been doing that a lot. But also, I think, too, that he's carrying a lot more responsibilities. You know, when Logan was there, he didn't really have to do that. You got Butler. There's more of a quiet guy, but a real feisty guy. But I think that he thinks that he has to make sure he covers everybody. I may be wrong, but that's kind of what I see. And also, I just see that the quarterback is using the eyes to get him away from the spot, and that's exactly what's happening.
That's a good point. And with that example that you mentioned, there was no one where Baker was looking. You know what I mean? And he did an excellent job just buying that split second. And the timing was perfect because Butler slipped on the play too. So it opened it up, man. I want to see Kevin Byard start to come around because he's such a talented player, right?
And then another thing, too, is it's not that he's not doing good in pass coverage. I mean, he's missing a lot of tackles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you're missing a lot of tackles and you're supposed to be the safety net, I mean, that's a cause for concern. So, you know, we still got a couple of more games left. He can kind of pick it up and be ready for the playoffs.
And that tackling was something that he really – that was one of the things that kind of separated him because he was such a sure tackler. But there have been multiple times. I think it was the Vikings game on Dalvin Cook's long run. He took a bad angle.
Yeah.
The first Jaguars game, James Robinson ran through a tackle, and that was, I think it was like a 19-yard run or something like that. But, you know, these are the things, as you mentioned, as a safety, it can't happen. I just wonder, because another thing that I think of just in Dean Pease and his scheme, and this goes back to my days covering the Ravens, you know, because – even a guy like Will Hill, you know what I mean, out of Florida.
Yeah.
He went to the Ravens, and man, he had a pretty good year. You know what I mean? So it's like
is so safety oriented. Obviously, with Bernard Pollard back in the day, right? Earl Thomas when he not Earl Thomas, but Ed Reed. You know, these are guys that have always been Rodney Harrison. There have been so many safeties that have thrived under Dean Pease. Kenny Vaccaro, actually, Vaccaro said that Dean Pease is the best coordinator he's ever had, and it allowed him to truly be a safety, and that's what he loved about that defense. Sometimes I wonder, okay, is going from that to this, is that hurting Kevin Byard?
Yeah, I think what it is, everybody talks about Dean Pease, and I think Dean Pease is an awesome coach, but the one thing that Dean Pease had that was really special is he's a teacher.
Yes.
I mean, he's a teacher. He's going to explain it to you to where you can understand it. And I think with the COVID and the offseason and Dean Pease not being there, I think Byard didn't get a lot of the teaching. I'm not disrespecting the secondary coach there. I'm just saying, but when you have a guy that's been in the league, that's seen everything, that's been around all these places and succeeded, when you remove that teaching, then sometimes it maybe gives you a little setback. And especially with COVID, when you don't have OTAs, you really don't have camp, you're going to miss some of that teaching to do what you need to do.
No doubt. And it's funny you mentioned that him being a teacher. He literally was a teacher.
You know what I'm saying?
That's an excellent point. Excellent point. It really is something that has to be harped upon. Before, and I know I said before the Dean Pease thing, I like talking to you, man. I can't help
me
it.
Me too, man.
I know our time is running short, but real quick, because it's a hot question from the fans. Well, not even a question. It's a demand, a statement that they're making, not having a defensive coordinator. That just automatically means that this defense can't get good, and they're saying that Mike Vrabel needs to bring someone in now. Why is bringing a coordinator in right now not a good thing?
I think it could be a good or a bad thing. I think the good thing about it is it'll take the pressure off of Mike Vrabel to come up with the scheme, and he can just focus on managing the team. You know, I mean, in that aspect. But the negative can be to where you're going to learn a different philosophy from a different teacher. That can be the Achilles heel. You just want to keep everything simple like it is now, and then at the end of the season, now you come and revisit and say if you need to do that or not.
Yeah, the ship has sailed on bringing a coordinator in. You can't do it right now. You can't shift to a new scheme. No, it can't happen. But in the
really
offseason,
fired up.
Man, tell me about it. And they'll all be playing slow. So,
you come out of retirement.
I don't think so.
I come off the hatch with that one bar face mask and let's eat, baby.
I said that in my Magic Johnson voice. I ain't gonna be there. Oh man, that's
a trip, man. Man, I appreciate you.
Yeah, I appreciate you too,
man.
Yeah, we'll talk before the game on Sunday.
Good deal. Appreciate you, boss.
All right, for sure.
This is Corey Davis, and you talking with TD.
All right, back from the break to wrap this thing up, man. Nothing but a G thing. That's what's going on for the wide receiver core, right? When you look at Corey Davis and A.J. Brown, it's nothing but a G thing. That's what they're working to get that 1,000-yard plateau. And I think it's obviously within reach. Corey Davis at 836, A.J. Brown at 837. Last week's game was a tough one for Corey Davis, you know, only having 35 yards receiving. A.J. Brown obviously had over 100. Mm-hmm. So he was able to, you know, even things out a little bit as far as who's leading the team in receiving yards. But both of these guys, they need to get 1,000 yards. It needs to be a reincarnation of Drew Bennett and Derek Mason back, you know, in the day. And I think that's something that will be a testament to what this offense has been able to do. Ryan Tannehill is an outside shot of 4,000 yards. And you look at Derrick Henry, outside shot at 2,000 yards. And I think if you could have all of that together, man, that's a really good sign of offense. But it may come at a cost, because not only are we seeing that, NFL teams are seeing that.
All 31 of them.
And you know what they're going to do. They're going to say, hey, look, Arthur Smith was able to do this, this, and this. I want to be able to do that. And that could mean a job for Arthur Smith. I wish Coach Art the best, whatever should happen. But, you know, I think when you look at these 1,000-yard receivers, that's just – I mean, just last year, everyone was looking at it like, hey, man, it hasn't been a 1,000-yard season since, what, 2000, was it 14?
Ooh, I think maybe even long. Oh, no, you're right. I think might have been 2014.
Yeah, so I'm talking about for a receiver.
Yeah.
Right? Because you had Delanie Walker who had his, but, you know, it had been a while. We'll put it that way. So now you're in a situation where you got two guys. It's not your dad's Titans, I guess you could say.
Not anymore.
No, it's a different era, different approach. But the thing that's so crazy with that is I don't even think they're really unleashing Tannehill the way that they could. Mm-mm. Ryan Tannehill is a quarterback that I think you could put him in that pocket and you could let him pick a team apart in addition to working the play action. But a lot of it is just, you know, timely passes. He's kind of gone beyond that, hey, go out there, I need you to make one or two plays, but don't win the game. He's gone beyond that. They are asking him to win them some games, which is a sign of a progression on Arthur Smith's part as well as the passing game overall. But these receivers and Corey Davis, you know, he's gotten to be such a more consistent player. And it's crazy I say that after he just had 35 yards last week, but he's still gotten to be more consistent. This year alone, he has 4 100-yard receiving games. Before this year, he only had 2 in his career. So you're really seeing him explode. He's on pace, you know, to hit that 1,000-yard mark. But that game 2 weeks ago, 11 receptions. What was it? 180 or something?
Yeah, 182.
182.
Maybe. Yeah.
Both career
leading receiver
highs.
In the league.
12 targets. His career high targets were 15. That came in 2018, I want to say. But still, he made the most of those opportunities, and you want to see him continue to do that. A.J. Brown, the yards after the catch, the yak monster, that's really what he is. And it's kind of a gift and a curse with that, because one of the things that you're starting to see kind of surface from time to time are the drops. But what's happening is he's trying to catch it and turn up field and make a play right away. And that tells you that there's such an emphasis on yards after the catch. And it's interesting because, you know, these are some of the things that happens when you have a coach who played the position. Coincidentally, Rob Moore, you know, he's a guy that has been a 1,000-yard receiver in the past, and he's a guy that has coached 1,000-yard receivers. You know, we're talking about tandems even, and he actually got into that. Listen to what Rob Moore had to say when I asked him about, you know, having a pair of receivers hit 1,000 yards.
Well, you know, fortunately, I had that experience with Oakland with Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree. Both those guys went over 1,000. You know, we all know that for whatever reason, 1,000 yards is like the litmus test, so to speak, in terms of whether a receiver's arrived or had a decent season or whatever the case may be. And, you know, you always want, you know, especially if it's one of your players' goals, you want them to be able to achieve that experience, that and let that be the barometer for every year. But the key is, like I tell all my guys, is the yak. You know, the key is, can you get to 1,000 yards with 50-something catches? Mm. Or can you, you know, with 60 catches? If it's got to take you 100 to get to 1,000, then that's not quite as productive. So one of the big things in our room is about the yards after the catch and making people tackle us.
And that's the thing. A.J. Brown, 51 receptions, 837 yards, 9 touchdowns. 9 touchdowns, career high, by the way. So, obviously, he's been in the league 2 years, you know, but still, it's a career high. 16.4 yards per catch. So that tells you right there, A.J. Brown is right where they want him to be as far as making the most out of yards after the catch and getting that. He remains one of the best in the game at that. And even Corey Davis. I mean, Corey Davis is at 56 receptions, 835. 14 yards per catch, almost 15. It's 14.9. So both of these guys are doing what they have to do when the ball gets in their hand, and that's a part of what makes this team so physical all around when you look at the offense, because even the passing game is physical. When you have a guy like A.J. Brown who could break tackles the way he does, we have a guy like Corey Davis who is able to, you know, go across the middle and make the plays that he does in traffic, and then you sprinkle in Jonnu Smith, who is another one of those angry runners. And that's why you have such a physical offense, because even when they're not running the football with Derrick Henry, they are still using physicality, and that's a major thing, and that's a part of what helps wear these teams down. You know, as a defensive back, if you're not having to tackle Derrick Henry, you're having to tackle, you know, a 6'6", 230-pound guy in A.J. Brown, and or, you know, just a guy that's pure muscle in Jonnu Smith, or a guy that's just, you know, just Corey Davis is not physically imposing, but he's just one of those angular, like, just the way it looks like it would probably hurt to tackle a guy like Corey Davis. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that's a major thing for this offense, and it's something that, along with the playoffs, right, along with Derrick Henry's 2K, the 1K for A.J. Brown and Corey Davis, that's something to definitely take note of. So it was good to stay on the positive. I don't really have anything negative to call out about the Titans, but, you know, we still got to do the segment. So what you got for me? Blow the whistle. Blow the whistle. Yeah, too short. Too short. It is time to blow the whistle. I honestly, I can't blow the whistle on anything Titans related. So I'm going to transfer to my field, right, and my field of media. And I'm going to say this. Jalen Hurts got his chance to play, and he did an outstanding job. I'm blowing the whistle on Darryl Johnston because, you know, to be on that broadcast saying that Carson Wentz and his faith connecting to Frank Wright not being there and their relationship as brothers in faith.
It was bizarre.
Is it like, what?
Yeah, I've heard the same thing. That's arguably one of the more bizarre things I think I've ever heard on a broadcast.
I have to hit him with the Ocho Cinco. Child, please. I mean, come on, man. So I'm blowing the whistle on a fellow media person in Darryl Johnston. Man, get that together, man. Find another. Stop doing these gymnastics to try to find a reason to explain. Oh, the dude just he fell off some.
That happens,
you know what I mean?
Happens to players all the time.
Right. But I'm also going to blow the whistle on these people that tried to say that Jalen Hurts is not an NFL quarterback because he went in there and beat the E. Sorry, man.
Tough
he beat the Saints, one of the best defenses in the league. And obviously he didn't do it alone. But everybody's going to say, hey, they didn't run the football like that before Jalen Hurts got there. Well, when you force it to be 11-on-11 and you force – on that read option, you force that defender to have to worry about the quarterback. These are the type of things that happen. So that's the show this week. Shout out to Michael Rothstein for jumping on. Chris Sanders, as always. And we're going to keep this thing rolling. Should be a Titans win this week. 10-4 could be the record. That's what it should be. Finally, this organization getting to 10 wins. But you have to play the game. That's on paper. So we'll be back. Hopefully, you guys will be back, and we'll take it from there. Thanks for tuning in. God bless. Good night.